Dan is stomping his boots as our intro comes on for the...
Yeah, I'm also looking over. I'm getting these texts from the Publix pharmacy about my 41 monthly medications. It's getting old's a lot to deal with, bro.
You got
to
take them before these rivalry games, just in case, yeah. You know, the medicine.
Yeah, and, 19 of those are for heart care, so I'm going to need those, like, immediately.
Dan Brennan sits across from me. I'm Dalton Orwig, and the two of us make up Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 106.5 every weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. And during football season, we like to do this show where we just sit around and talk about our true loves, and that is football. And plenty to talk about this Black Friday, obviously, with the rivalry games. And you might be listening to us 8 o'clock when we come on the station, which means a lot of the games that we're looking forward to right now as we record will have already taken place, at least a couple of them. But plenty of action on Saturday as well. And I do want to bring attention to, as we do every week, the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Pool, because this is the best. I mean, we've had more people that entered this year than we ever have before. And the end of the year here, the race is tighter than any I can remember.
Yeah.
Really, we have this last week of the regular season that'll have 10 games and has 10 games on the pick'em pool. And then next week with conference championship games, another 10 games. And that's pretty much it. We will have the Army-Navy game up the following week, and that's in case we have a tie after next week, which is not... It's looking like that very well may be a possibility, because we have two people tied at the top right now, AL Cowboy 50 and Pat's Picks, and I believe both are regular listeners to Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. And then another mainstay at the top of the leaderboard is only one game behind them, and that's DGAPANBTT Blitz Bama Blitz, the screen name on the Run Your Pool. And then another three that are only three games back, and we know that you can make up three games in just a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, so quick.
This is intense, and the winner getting that awesome big prize from Spring Hill Ace Hardware with the RecTech grill and smoker, and it's like Wi-Fi enabled, so it has all the bells and whistles that you could even imagine with a grill and smoker. And then we'll give you pellets with that from Spring Hill Ace, a grill cover, a TurtleBox Bluetooth speaker, one of those that has the magnet on it so you can, like, stick it to the golf cart if you're at the course or riding around town, or put it on the boat, and it sounds amazing. It's just super loud and super clear. And then, of course, the 32-can Yeti soft side cooler. And go ahead and go buy Spring Hill Ace, because as we head towards Christmas, you will be the family's favorite giver if you end up getting your gifts from there. They have everything from little stocking stuffers near the front of the store to the big, big stuff that you might not even be able to wrap as you get ready for Christmas.
I've been shopping for gifts included Spring Hill Ace Hardware for 30 years, I'll bet you. Even at their older location in mm-hmm. the shopping center, now they're kind of on their own there on Spring Hill Avenue, not far from Municipal Park. So get out there and find what you're looking for, and find what others are looking for, too. There are a lot of great gifts. Christmas gift ideas there.
I like that Spring Hill Ace, you know, you have all the Ace Hardware stuff, but you get the personality of yep. the person running the store, which is Tip, and yep. he's so great. So, yeah, check it out, especially if you're looking for some Christmas gifts to buy folks this year, or maybe buy yourself. Now, last weekend's games, none of them were all that sexy, honestly, as people get ready, as these teams get ready for this week's rivalry games. And several of you, actually, more than a handful. We're looking at probably 15, 20 people. I've never seen anything like this. About 20 people that went 9-1.
Really?
This past week, yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely crazy. I was not one. I went 5-5, which is better than I've been doing. Junkyard, you're still in the mix. You went 6-4.
Yeah, I got back to 500, so that's good. One thing that I noticed from this past weekend, a lot of people react to these games, a lot of podcasters, a lot of broadcasters, you know, they immediately come out with their reactions of the games from this past weekend. I was a little confused by Cole Kubelik, who I really like.
Mm-hmm. He's
SEC
great.
SEC analyst, ESPN too, and he really is good. But he sent out a tweet about the Tennessee-Florida game that does not – I don't know what game he was looking at, because Tennessee I'm looking at the stats right now.
Yeah.
And it's as I remember with my own eyes – Tennessee dominated Florida, down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And his assessment of that game did not match up with, I mean, they dominated in first downs and rushing yards. They clobbered them.
It was the easiest game, most fun I've had watching Tennessee in any sport in a long time. It was stress-free almost after that first half.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
The defense was great.
And get this, I wasn't even drinking. and I had a good time.
So, also, that coming off this game, is one down in the swamp is one of the reasons I do like Tennessee this week.
Against Vandy
at home, yeah, up in Knoxville. I think they're going to be good to go.
So Cole does a great job. Every week he watches the film. He really does. He's not like some of these guys that hops out there and just gives a take. I think I'm talking about myself right now.
You're talking about the two individuals in this room right now, so zip it.
But he does grind the tape, as Brooks Austin likes to do. Great YouTube follow, by the way. But he was kind of, it was weird, his analysis of Florida as he watched. He basically said they came out strong. A little further down the line, he said the defense started strong and wore down late. That wasn't the game I saw. But.
Okay, well, here's coming out strong. First, these are the final stats, but did they come out strong at all? 28 first downs for Tennessee, 15 for Florida. Total yards, 452 for Tennessee, 251 for Florida. I mean, they didn't do anything up to standard for what Tennessee was doing.
And those 11 first downs came late. I mean, they didn't get their first down, I want to say, until at least the second quarter.
Yeah, I don't. So Cole does a good job. I think he kind of whiffed on that one.
Yeah, well, Florida whiffed on it. What an absolute shellacking that the Vols put on them. And first win for Tennessee in Gainesville since 2003. Josh Heupel's won 3 of 4 against the Florida Gators since he's been head coach. And he also has a win against Alabama. Did he ever get one against Georgia?
No.
So that's the one that's still out there for Heupel. Yep. And he's had winning records against Vandy and Kentucky, which is about all you can ask for a Tennessee coach. And we'll see. We'll test that theory against Vanderbilt with the game coming up on Saturday.
That's a fascinating game. We got all these big name games, and that one's slipping through. And it might be one of the more enjoyable games of the weekend.
But boy, Pavia, I mean, you know, until about 3 weeks ago, you wanted to put him in the Heisman race just because of his importance to the team as far as its heart.
Yeah.
And he played so hard. But he's added the stats here these last couple of weeks where he's really gone off.
He really has. He'll be in New York City now, no doubt.
Yeah.
Because he was already a headliner before the stats showed up here late in the year.
And some of those freaks out there are more excited about the moms of the Tennessee Vanderbilt game than they are.
I don't get you people at all.
The Pavia mom and Aguilar mom.
I do. What, you know, just watch, keep an eye on the field and stop all that. And I'm pleading not guilty to any such charges.
And I do want to say, you know, speaking of Pavia and Aguilar, they have this lawsuit. They're aiming for another season of eligibility. And Pavia's already won one before, but they're saying, you know, the JUCO years shouldn't count. Mm. And if that works out for both of them, which I'm not saying there's a real chance that it does, but might have Pavia and Aguilar back next year.
More Pavia. Bring them back.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy it.
I'm saying more Aguilar, personally.
Yeah, I get it.
South with a good win, beating Southern Miss in Mobile. And they were up big, so Southern Miss had a huge comeback, but South ended up beating them. That was a good win. They're just too far out for bowl eligibility. A big game this weekend for them to get to 5-7 as they end the year, and they are playing Texas State and underdogs. We'll get to that game in a little bit. Texas took care of business against Arkansas.
They sure did. 52 points.
Oklahoma, their defense really handled Missouri in that 17-6 win. The Oregon-USC game, I was expecting some fireworks there, but Oregon, even though the score was 42-27, really kind of had control all the way through on that one. And they could be, with Lanning, I mean, don't count Lanning short in anything, because Oregon could be gearing up for quite a run through this college football playoffs.
Yeah, and there was something about USC. I watched some of that game, and they're just... They have talented wideouts, yes, but, man, you know, when you give up like this long punt return for a touchdown, I mean, there was nobody even on that side of the field, just really poorly coached or, you know, that when you watch a team very bad in special teams, that usually tells you a lot about is this team quality or not.
Yeah.
They might be talented, but the coaching is.
We'll have Drew Fabiana on coming up next. We'll also talk with Feinbaum, as we do every week, and a lot of talk about the Iron Bowl on our show tonight. And I'm excited for Auburn. You know, I don't know if this Deuce Knight thing will work out for him this weekend, and I really hope in this new era that he sticks around, because I know they were playing Mercer, but he showed, man, that he can be out there and be a real difference maker.
All he has to do is contact Pavia's attorney, and he'll be around at 2032. You just watch and see.
Well, if he plays this well, and I don't understand the whole red shirt thing for these guys that have come in, five stars, four stars, they're not going to stay. They're not going to stay in year four and five unless they're really getting big bucks and have slid down the draft boards. The Hugh Freeze thing makes absolutely no sense to me, that he waited so long, not just for Deuce Knight, but even Ashton Daniels. I mean, my God, man.
Yeah, there he was on the bench all the whole season. And it seemed to be obvious you needed to do something at quarterback. Yeah. So we'll see. Daniels had the great game against Vanderbilt, and he wanted to preserve that red shirt, sat out last week. So you'll have a combination, I guess, of Daniels and Deuce Knight in the Iron Bowl.
Now, I do get the red shirt thing with a guy like Ashton Daniels. Yeah. He's not going to go first round.
Yeah.
So might as well keep him around as long as you can. But Deuce Knight and similar players where it just doesn't make sense to me. All right, we come back. That Drew Fabianich segment that we have every week, the executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl. We're getting close to that, too. And hopefully we'll see a lot of y'all down there at Hancock Whitney for the Senior Bowl at the end of January. And Senator talk show host Paul Feinbaum joins us in segment three, and we'll wrap it up with our picks for this weekend's rivalry action in the end of the show. You're listening to Dan and Dalton's College Football Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Drew Fabianich is the executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl. He joins us on this Monday, as he generally does, after a weekend of college football. And by the way, Drew, something new happened in terms of my TV viewing yesterday. Were you able to see all the games over the weekend? Has that been settled?
Okay. I believe, yeah.
So I'm getting ready to watch the. I go to NBC last night. My provider is Fubo, and Fubo informs me we are having discussions right now with NBC Universal. I'm like, are you blanking kidding me? So anyway, it was a TV-free evening with Danny B last night.
Wow.
You didn't miss much.
No. Well, he missed Stafford playing out of his absolute mind. Yeah. But yeah, as far as the game, not too great. Drew, how are you this morning? Heading into
good. How are you guys?
We're good. Rivalry week this week, and thank goodness we have some potentially really good games on the schedule, because this past weekend it wasn't through and through a cupcake week, but we didn't have a whole lot of tight games.
No, there wasn't a lot of them there. There wasn't even a lot of tight ones on the ones that actually worked. Because you would say cupcakes.
Yeah.
I used to call them money games, because I was on the other end of those money games.
You were getting the money.
Oh yeah. Like when I was at Louisiana Monroe, we played three top five teams. Played Arizona, Florida, and Kansas State all in the first 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. So I'm serious when I ask this. Were there a lot of injuries?
A few, but again, that's what you had to do to support the athletic program.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no ifs, ands, or buts around it.
Yeah. Well, this week and weekend should be great for the games that we have, but, not a whole lot of movement in the top of the rankings. I guess just Oregon moved up a little bit after that win over USC. I'm interested, too, as some of these quarterbacks decide whether or not they're going to enter the draft and maybe come down to Mobile for the Senior Bowl as they prepare for their next stage of their careers, or stay back at school. Dante Moore, quarterback for Oregon, one of these that folks really don't know what he's going to do, but he's certainly shown some flashes, and some have said he could be the first quarterback taken, if depending on how things shake out.
Well, and some of those opinions come from people that don't know if the ball's pumped or stuffed either.
He pretty much just handed the ball off this week. They just ran the ball.
Well, he was also missing some receivers, but he ought to stay in school. Hmm. Would he be the first quarterback taken? I don't think so. But again, that's just my opinion. Just like all these mock drafts, they got opinions. All the talking heads got opinions. We all got opinions. But put it this way: when you have that opinion, and it doesn't, you're put it this way, your living doesn't depend on it, like NFL personnel people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's pretty easy to, you know, say what you want to say and then no repercussions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What is that like, being someone who, you know, for a living scouts these players and has had your career, you know, live and die by who you select? When you see some of these mocks come out, and even if it's Mel Kiper, who's a well-established name, but do you just laugh and shake your head or have a group text going like, what in the heck is this guy thinking?
No, I don't even waste my time anymore, to be honest, because it'll change seven more times.
Yeah.
It'll be like, haven't you seen this as my mock draft 1.0? And by the time it gets to the draft, it'll be my draft 12.0. And
yeah,
it's after I talk to everybody, after I go to the combine, and after I listen to everybody talk, and then all of a sudden, we get close to what it's actually going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, scouts and personnel people can't help it. They love to hear themselves talk. Yeah.
And also, there is no position with the variation of outcome in quarterback. When you're just scouting a player, if it's a defensive end or if it's a linebacker or a safety, whatever, your chances of being right on with your evaluation, probably, you know, the percentage is pretty high, as opposed with a quarterback where you can just think he's the greatest thing ever and he can't get out of his own way in the pros.
Well, and some of that's because of the way that, you know, these kids are coached in college. And, you know, in the NFL, it's a whole different ball game, because the verbiage is so long. It's, you know, it's hard to learn. You have to change the protections. You have to identify the mic. You know, you have to be all well aware of all of this, and you got to do it in 45 seconds.
Yep.
Well, in college, you don't have to do that. I mean, because, you know, some of the times it's signaled in. You don't even have to get in the huddle. You don't even make a huddle call. And the reason why the verbiage is so long is because play sheets are about 400 plays long in the NFL, and you can't rep 400 plays. So you have to tell everybody what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow. You know, and the classic video I saw, and it was Chris Sims trying to repeat John Gruden's huddle calls.
Hmm.
And if you can look it up on, you can look it up online, and he's messing it up. And Chris Sims is a very smart young man, you know, not young man anymore, but very smart, and played quarterback his whole life, and he couldn't get it all.
Yeah.
You know, in the first year. So that's where the development is hard, and when you're not prepared for that, you know, the game is too fast for you in the NFL, and until you get to where you understand what you're doing, it's not going to slow down.
Yeah, I've been watching, you know, as a Titans fan, Cam Ward kind of figure it out throughout the year, and he's starting to look more comfortable, and so much of it is just that play clock in your head, how much time you have to get it done, and how much faster it is in the NFL than in college ball. And talking about the play calls, I mean, last night in that Rams-Buccaneers game.
There was a game last night?
Because it was a blowout, that kind of became a central storyline, was Stafford receiving the call from McVay, and they said about 25 words, I think, on average for each play call. I'm just picturing, after he gets his after he gets hit pretty hard or something, how difficult that must be to get back to the huddle, spit out this paragraph of a call, and then get to the line, and then the real work begins. It's just amazing to me, Drew.
Yeah, when you get to the line of scrimmage, it's, well, okay, what's the coverage showing me? What are they showing me? Are they bringing any blitz? Do I have to change the protection? Then I got to ID the mic. Then I got to change everything. Then if you got a kill call to where you can kill it to a run, well, then what's the run like? Well, you're gonna audibleize to the run too. Now all this is done in 45 seconds.
It's absolutely,
yeah, it's maddening.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What's the tackle situation look like in this year's draft, even compared to other years? Are there a lot of guys you could see playing on the edge, offensive tackle, I should say, for the near future? I know the Miami tackle, Francis Mauoga, or however you say his name, he's been looked at by a lot of folks, but I haven't heard many talking about the offensive line this year.
Well, I think it's normal that the offensive tackle non-glamour position,
mm-hmm.
you know, quote, is not talked about till later on, until the combine, until, you know, the draft process, you know, kind of kicks into gear. Because I think the tackle class is probably about the same as it was last year. The guard center is not as strong as it was last year. You know, but I'll tell you one thing: the defensive end and edge class is really, 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 really good. I'm going to leave some guys. I'm going to leave some guys on the street that I would love to have in the game, just because I don't have enough. I don't have enough spots for them. The interior defensive line is not as good as it was last year. Linebacker safeties are about the same, you know, because linebacker safety has kind of dwindled in numbers over about the last 10 years because I think that there's a lot of kids that just do not want to play linebacker safety because it's not glamorous. There's not, you know, the big money there, but there really is if you just stick with it,
right.
You know, but they want balls, they want touches, they want to play tight end, they want to play receiver, you know, I'm bouncing around a little bit, but
yeah.
Corners about the same. The receiver class is deep, but it doesn't have a lot of number one receivers. There's a lot of number twos. There's a lot of number threes in it, but it's pretty deep. Tight end class is really good. Nice mix of Y tight ends and then FH tight ends, the receiving tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback, I think, is good. You know, probably better than last year, to be quite honest with you. You know, so I think I kind of covered most of my running backs, probably about the same as last year. So...
That's interesting, too. And you brought up tight ends. You know, I wonder if we're in a new era where all of the guys who grew up watching Gronk and Kelce and
Kittle now,
and some of these guys. I mean, you look at Bowers and you look at some of these guys who are coming out, and they seem like real game changers, not just end-line blockers that get out for a little swing or a little throw in the flats every now and then. These are guys that can change the game. I know tight ends Max Clair had a big week, even though they were playing Syracuse, who's been seeing some rough times. And Kenyon Sadiq with Oregon, that tight end. There are some guys who can really help a team out in a major way.
Yeah, but like you said, though, they're not inline blockers, though.
Yeah.
They're really quasi-receivers, I mean, when you look at it. That's why we always call them FH types, because – they're too small, you know, to actually get any movement in line. The guys like Kittle that can do both, they're rare. I mean, rare. You know, Jason Witten was a good position blocker, but was he a dominant blocker? Wasn't dominant, but he was good.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also catching 100 balls every year.
Right.
You know, so that's where he made his money, and he knew it. You know, the Tony Gonzalez is the world. Those kind of guys, that's kind of size that can block. Like I said, they're few and far between. These guys are more receiving tight ends, detached tight ends, and, you know, more like move blocking, you know, tight ends. Like we call them whams and space guys, because, like I said, there's not a lot of George Kittles out there. There aren't.
So rivalry week is coming up. I know you've got to look at everything through the lens as the executive director of the Senior Bowl, but just as a fan, this is a lot of fun. Texas A&M in Texas. Georgia Tech, Alabama, Auburn, and the Iron Bowl.
You got the Egg Bowl on Friday.
And the Lane Kiffin situation is weaved in within that. So a lot of interesting TV watching beginning this Friday, for sure, Drew.
Absolutely. Now, I was part of the, quote, you know, rivalry with Tennessee and, you know, and Kentucky. But, you know, when I was at Tennessee, we didn't say it was really a rivalry because you actually had to win a game every once in a while to be a rivalry. You
know? I get it.
And it's back to that, finally.
It is back to that, yeah. I mean, and I think Cutler kind of was the first one to actually beat Tennessee in quite a while, you know, way back. Mm-hmm. So it's good they brought it around, and it's going to be an interesting game. And, you know, the Iron Bowl will be a little bit more interesting than people think. You know, too. There really will be.
Yeah, especially with Deuce Knight showing up against Mercer. You wonder how much they'll play that freshman this week against Bama. But it should be a good one. And I know you guys, I mean, it is almost crunch time for the Senior Bowl. We have let's see if I can do math, just over 2 months until the game. But, of course, so much goes into it. You guys are going to be working nonstop.
Yeah, the invites are actually going out tomorrow.
Okay.
On the 25th. So, we did that for a reason, because I knew that, you know, being on that coaching side for a long time, you know, coaches don't like to get the rhythm broke with the team and all that during the regular season. So there wasn't any reason to do it any earlier, just because they were going to be sitting around for 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to be right. We didn't want to rush to it. We wanted to let guys play up into the game or play out of the game. And that's really why we did it.
That's interesting. So that's interesting.
Going out tomorrow.
So you've seen players at in August or September really not high enough on your board, but now they're going to be in the game. Is that right?
Absolutely, and the other way around too.
Cool.
All right, looking forward to it, and tickets available at seniorbowl.com. Of course, that whole week, there's plenty for folks around here to do, so really can't wait for that, Drew, and we'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Executive Director Panini Senior Bowl, Drew Fabianich. Great dude. Informative. Texter here says, how about them Cowboys? Yeah, what a win for them against Philly yesterday. And I showed you that Gunner, who's a seventh rounder, I believe. There's a gunner on the punt team who had the most unbelievable effort play I've seen.
And caused a fumble. After getting his head bashed in about five times on the way downfield.
I'll put that on my Twitter page for folks to check out.
Please do. That's fantastic. Dan and Dalton.
It's time for Football Friday with Paul Feinbaum, presented by Bryant Bank. Your hometown bank with big bank benefits, located in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Now, here's Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
And, of course, the man of the hour, Paul Feinbaum. The Paul Feinbaum Show on FM Talk 106.5 and nationwide on the SEC Network. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, my fellow Alabamians. <We've got you. laughs>
Yeah, you want to get that speech ready. All right.
I'm ready to go.
Real quick with Lane Kiffin. I told Dalton we're down to three choices here. Well, four. He can stay at Ole Miss.
That's one choice, yeah.
He can go to LSU. He can go to Florida. Or he could run for U.S. Senate. Now, I don't know which one of those four Lane's leading toward. What do you know?
Listen, I've had a good chance to look over both where Lane is in the U.S. Senate, and I think I'll take one of those other jobs. They pay a lot better than than meager government salary. But I can't. What really bugs me about Lane is the fight and con. Make up your mind already. Quit leading the public on.
Yeah, and that seems to be what they're saying in Ole Miss. You know?
And we had a caller earlier this week on the day before Thanksgiving, and he was just like, look, if I had a dollar for every time I heard that guy's name in the last 3 weeks, I'd be a millionaire. A lot of people are kind of fed up with the whole thing.
Yeah, by the way, don't quote me on this, but there is another possibility. One of my callers mentioned the other day, what if Kalen DeBoer loses the Iron Bowl, gets hired by somebody else, and then Lane Kiffin goes to Alabama.
Mm. Yeah, and that seems to be a popular take among Alabama fans.
I guess it originated on your show, but I have heard that a time or two.
Can you imagine them Bama fans living through what Rebels fans are right now, though? I mean, that would tear that university apart, him doing this to them every year.
Whatever happened to, we love Kalen DeBoer, and we forgive you for the Florida State game. I gave this quote to somebody the other day. I think it was the Wall Street Journal, where I said that, Lane Kiffin is a brilliant football coach, but he also has the mindset of a 17-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. He loves this, but he hates it. People come to me all the time and they say, well, you know Lane, you're friends with him. I have no earthly idea. And I think there's a chance that Lane Kiffin doesn't know, which is why this is such a circus. Mm.
Yeah, and we don't have to wait long today to see his team in action, and then theoretically not long after the game to know what his decision is. But that's an 11 a.m. kickoff, the Egg Bowl in Starkville this year. And is there a chance that Mississippi State pulls this off? I don't know where the heads of the Rebels players are right now.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I would say no is that, you know, these young guys, they're already looking for their next job too, or their next school. So I don't think they're as hung up as maybe it would have been 15 or 20 or 50 years ago, whenever. They're all transactional. That's where college football is right now. And Mississippi State is a pretty good team. Everyone knows what they've done. They took Texas to overtime. They took Tennessee to overtime. But lately they haven't played all that well, which concerns me about today's game.
Yeah, like their defense is really kind of tapped out. They have some injuries, and I think it's a mismatch physically. We'll see. Quick breaking news from the last weekend and into this weekend into A&M against Texas is that Arch Manning is alive and well, Paul.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, is Arch in the Heisman race? I said, yes, for 2026. You cannot give somebody the Heisman when they're terrible for the first eight games. He has been brilliant lately, but it's just not enough. I think the real conundrum here is if Texas wins this game, are they on the edge of the playoff or not? And that depends on so many other variables, like whether Michigan beats Ohio State and Vandy. I mean, there are countless other possibilities, but my best guess is even if they win the game, they're not going to get into the playoff.
I would say Texas. Don, what do you think? I think Texas has got more than a chance. I mean, they're at home.
I think they do. It's kind of crazy. You know, when they were playing Georgia, Arch looked great. It's the team around him. Yep. And they just – I don't know what it is. I mean, they were ranked so high coming into the year. And on the thought that Arch was going to play great, it wasn't him. It was the team around him that had ranked number one. So, or number two, I guess, when they opened the season. But – the team around him, he's kind of taken all the arrows because of their failures.
Yeah.
They were number one in the country when they got to Ohio State back in August. His receivers were terrible. And his offensive line is ridiculously bad. So Sarkisian, for all of his bluster, did not do a very good job in protecting Arch this year.
Well, it's not a matter of money. I mean, if Texas was looking at their team preseason saying, you know, we have some holes in the offensive line, my God, you're Texas. Just go fix it.
Yeah, can't you go to the Cowboys and borrow somebody?
Maybe so.
And you know what would be funny? Elko's had such a great year. I mean, this is a year of all years for A&M. What if Kiffin gets this big raise wherever he goes, and then they just top it at A&M with Elko, and he's immediately the highest-paid coach? He has done a great job for all of Jimbo Fisher's failures. He's stepped in and done exactly what Aggies fans were hoping for.
He has, but the only caveat I would offer is, you know, they have that really good win at Notre Dame. Other than that, they have a bunch of wins over Missouri and South Carolina, and the Oklahoma win is good, but it was, you know, with a banged up Mateer. So I mean, I'm a little suspicious of A&M, although they do. I mean, they've had their best season ever, and I think the comeback against South Carolina told us a lot, but. I don't have to because I'm just a senatorial candidate, but I would probably go with the Longhorns tonight.
Mm-hmm. How about all right, so me and Paul both on the same page there. There's quite a game that's sandwiched in between those two, Dalton.
Yeah, and Dan, who's a Georgia fan, has never – every week you're not confident that your team's going to go out and take care of business. For some reason this week you are. You think they're going to just take it to Georgia Tech?
They're just playing well. They're a young team. They're not full of themselves. They play hard for Kirby Smart, and if they do what they're supposed to do – their offense is tough to stop, and Tech's not good on defense. It may be a shootout, but I like Georgia.
What do you think, Paul?
I agree. Tech kind of made me uncomfortable the last time we saw them. So, I mean, the Dogs are – how in the world they've gotten to the final game of the year with only one loss, I'll never know. But I think it goes to the fact that they are resilient. Kirby Smart is the best coach in the country. And you know, he talks about the physicality, but I think that is the secret. I mean, they like to mix it up, unlike some of these teams who are more finesse-oriented.
Yeah, he hurt a lot of Texas fans' feelings just saying the truth after that game about physicality. And they took it personally.
That one high school coach on some podcast, he was losing his mind. He just, he just thought it was an insult on the Longhorns. And Kirby never mentioned the team or anybody else. He just talked about his team. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Hurt feelings.
Yeah, I don't know
nothing.
Why they thought that, considering that Georgia just beat Texas to a pulp, and Kirby said it right after that game. He must have been talking about the Tennessee game.
Okay, maybe you have a point there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about tomorrow's action. Of course, the biggest game around here, as it is every year, the Iron Bowl. And under the lights, finally again, Jordan-Hare. Deuce Knight giving Tigers fans a ray of hope, a ray of sunshine with that great performance against Mercer last week. What do you think Auburn can do against Bama this weekend?
I am not in the camp that so many of Alabama fans who are scared to death about this. I just don't think, I think Deuce Knight has played well, and that's an exciting story, but I'm still trying to find anything that Auburn's done this year that would make me think they could beat Alabama. And I say that, and then I remember the Florida State and Oklahoma game, and I'm getting nervous just like you are.
Yeah, there is some evidence that could show where Bama's weaknesses are. And I'll tell you, Paul, for a team with that kind of a poor record, Auburn's defense, aside from the Vanderbilt game, they have been tough all year.
Yeah, and the one thing about the Vanderbilt game is, their coordinator was also the head coach, which makes people wonder, like, can you be as good a coordinator when you are doing dual duty? So I don't know. I mean, but to me, it's all about Alabama tonight. If they struggle from the beginning, if they look sloppy, if they turn the ball over, then you better watch out, because the crowd at night is a factor. Jordan Hare is always a very difficult place to play, but it's a little bit like Tiger Stadium the later in the day it gets. But you have to keep that crowd engaged. You can't start off. You can't let Alabama do what it has done at times this year and just spurt out to a big lead, because then I don't think it's going to matter.
Yeah, and then, if Bama loses, maybe that DeBoer to Penn State, Kiffin to Tuscaloosa rumor gains a little momentum. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Lane's not asking me, but if he was, I would say do not make it. I would wait at least the halftime of the Iron Bowl before you made a decision.
I guess we'll get you out of here on this, our last question. I think this could be the game of the weekend, actually. Vandy in Knoxville against Tennessee, and they can't move up that CFP board, but a win over Tennessee might get them closer to the mix for the playoff. What do you see happening in Knoxville tomorrow?
Yeah, that's where I'm heading today. I thought I was going to the Iron Bowl, but they said, no, you don't have residency at that game. this is probably one of the actually best game of the day, of the weekend in terms of matchups. I like Tennessee here. Pavia has been amazing, but Tennessee to me has been somewhat of a sleeping giant all year. They haven't played great at times, except for last weekend against Florida, which is emotionally very important, and I think some of that will ride into Neyland on Saturday.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Paul, thanks so much. I know you have limited time, and we appreciate you coming on, chopping it up with us, and trying to figure out what's in the mind of Freshwater, Coach Freshwater.
I will let you know what I know, and thanks to all the great people of the Mobile Baldwin County area. Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong cue card.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, Paul.
See you guys. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Paul Finebaum, Football Fridays with Finebaum, presented by Bryant Bank. And, man, he fit a lot of information in there in that one segment.
A lot of entertainment.
Yeah, and, I mean, Rivalry Week is always dramatic, but you add in these extra storylines and the job openings, it's just unreal.
It really is. I'm excited about what we're all about to experience in the next 24, 48 hours. It could be amazing.
All right. More Mobile Mornings on the way. 251-343-0106. Get to us before we head out on this Black Friday. Welcome back. If you're listening to us on this Black Friday, or maybe picking up the podcast early as you do some work around the house or drive around on Saturday getting ready for these rivalry games, and you'll already be able to call us fools. I mean, you probably already are, let's be honest. But
with our Friday picks.
Yeah, with our picks for Friday's action, which if you're listening to us at 8 o'clock on Friday as we air on FM Talk 106.5, go ahead and yell at us through the radio. We can't hear you.
Yeah.
We're watching the games right
Look,
now.
Look, I've been in radio so long that you can yell at me in front of me, and it does not bother me.
Doesn't even scratch the surface.
No. We're just having fun.
Now, I was really upset earlier this week with Auburn and Alabama really let me down in basketball. Mm-hmm. They got smoked in that players tournament. Game one for Alabama against Gonzaga, and then game two for Auburn against Michigan. And my Tennessee Vols, who are clearly the best team in the country right now.
They might be.
Playing for third place, or did play for third place earlier this week. So, thanks, Alabama and Auburn basketball.
You guys, so, how did they do that? How wasn't it just win in advance? You had to win by so many points?
Because it's a short tournament.
Yeah.
They go by point differential and total points to determine their top four teams in seeding.
The team that beat Auburn by 30...
Michigan, yeah.
Okay, they got the upper hand.
And Tennessee got that huge win over Houston, and nothing to show for it. So, let's get back to football and our picks for this week. And today, so Friday, there are two games on the board, and one is an early game, and that is the Egg Bowl. As we're recording right now, we still don't know the latest on Lane Kiffin, But Ole Miss favored in Starkville, so they're on the road, favored by 7.5 points over the Bulldogs.
If you're listening to this and the game's already over, apologies, but I just think there's so much upheaval in Ole Miss. I don't think Mississippi State is very good, but there's a lot of emotion in this game. Maybe more emotion than any of the rivalries. Something about the Egg Bowl, it is. It's deep,
mm-hmm.
the hatred. Anyway, I'm going to go with Mississippi State to at least cover. Ole Miss is a 7.5 point favorite.
I'm rooting for chaos, so I'm pulling for Mississippi State to not only keep it within the number, but win. I'm not saying that I think they'll win, but I'm on the dogs being underdogs at home as well. And, man, the fascination starts after the game. Mm. what happens next?
Yep.
Also, Texas A&M, this is a huge game. I mean, it's already a big rivalry game. But Texas A&M, 2.5 point favorites over Texas. With a win, the Aggies complete a perfect regular season and get ready for the SEC championship. A loss, and the championship gets jumbled up. So yep.
Paul Feinbaum pointed out something very interesting that not a lot of people are saying, that Texas A&M hasn't had the toughest schedule. Yeah, they won at Notre Dame. We get that early in the year. Other than that, you know, I'm thinking that here's a good chance for Arch, who's looked good recently, to be a star at home. Texas is at home, and get the win. Upset victory for the Longhorns.
Remind me, was Georgia's D-line and linebackers, were they getting after Arch when they played the other day? And he still played well. He took a lot of shots.
He did, and this was the first time this year that Georgia's D-line was really rushing the quarterback. So, yeah, they took it. His offensive line is not great, but
A&M has a defense, man.
Well, we're going to see. We're going to see. So Texas is coming off 52 against a team that does not have a defense. They're the University of Arkansas.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I'm going to take A&M in that one to cover the 2.5 points. The big game in,
Ann Arbor.
It's in Ann Arbor, yeah. And Michigan, somehow they do it year after year. Ryan Day must absolutely dread this weekend. But Michigan has found a way to win. And it would really be surprising if they figure it out this week. Ohio State, 9.5 point favorites in Ann Arbor in that big rivalry game. As we're recording now, still waiting to see if that fantastic Ohio State receiver, Jeremiah Smith, will play. And also Arvell Reese, who could be the top pick in the NFL draft. I guess there's some questions about whether he'll be ready for Saturday.
And the other receiver, number two, Carnell Tate, too. If they both play, I think Ohio State covers. So we'll see. You're right. Injuries this time of year happens all the time.
I think Ryan Day will exercise some demons, and especially with a freshman at quarterback in Michigan. As good as Underwood could end up being, I think the Buckeyes take it to him this weekend.
He's not there yet.
My apologies for putting Florida and Florida State in on our pick'em pool, but Florida's favored by 1.5 points in teams that would rather us not watch, honestly, on Saturday.
Yeah, it's almost like they all just look up at the press box and say, mind your own business. But I'm going to go with Florida. I don't know why. They're bad. Florida State is dreadful, so I'm taking bad over dreadful. They're also a 1.5 point favorite. So, they're at home.
Yeah.
I'll give him a fighter's chance.
Dan's doing the gator chomp if you can't see him right now.
That's my thing.
Or you might have just seen a fly. Pittsburgh, home underdogs, playing Miami. And a lot on the line for Miami in this one. I mean, a playoff spot
on the
line. And they're favored by 6.5 points.
Maybe a playoff spot. They're going to have to wiggle their way in somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say all the Miami theatrics is going to be over because Pittsburgh at least will cover. They're 6.5 point underdogs. I'm going with Pitt to cover, maybe win.
I wanted to tell you, I mean, Pitt, one of the most hot and cold 2 week stretches I have ever seen in my entire life. With they got blown out by
Notre Dame
37-15, and then the next week in Atlanta beat Georgia Tech 42-28.
Yeah, there was, even in the Georgia Tech game, it was two halves. They got way out in front quickly. And then Georgia Tech rallied to try and, you know, pull it out. So, they're not the steadiest of teams, but at home this week, I don't think Miami, even though they beat Notre Dame in the year, the way we look at these teams now, it's like, yeah, Miami's not Notre Dame, right?
Right.
And I feel that way.
Yeah.
So I think I give Pitt a shot here.
Yeah, and I think snow might be a factor. I don't know. That's just a guess because Dr. Bill said a lot of Pennsylvania will be getting some big snow this week. So I'm going to take Pitt, to cover his dogs as well. Oregon, another Big Ten game where they don't have to travel to the East Coast, but they do have to travel to Washington to take on the Huskies. The Ducks favored by 6.5 points, big win over USC last week.
So I don't know as much about Washington. I do like Oregon. And I'll go ahead and, you know, they're running for a lot of yards every game. That's always a good sign. Let's go with Oregon to cover that 6.5-point spread.
Dante Moore sure looks good. Mm-hmm. He really does. He throws a good a seam ball as any I've seen. He saw that touchdown last week. It was just incredible. I'm taking Oregon to cover the 6.5 points. South, underdogs on the road. Texas State favored by 9.5. I don't know squat about this game, but I'm taking the Jags.
Well, I know enough about it that I don't trust the Jags on the road against a team this good, so I'm going to have to go Texas State. Sorry about that. Love the Jags, but I see them getting beat up a little bit out there.
I think the Oklahoma-LSU game in Norman, not expecting offensive fireworks in this one. I think it'll be low scoring, but Oklahoma is favored by 9.5 points over the Bayou Bengals.
So I got the LSU Tigers covering, maybe not winning the game, but you're right. It's going to be points. You're going to be tough to come by. So I think LSU will at least sneak inside that 9.5.
And, you know, a lot of importance in that game, too. If LSU gets one by them, sayonara playoffs for
That's
the Oklahoma Sooners. But if they win, they're looking good. Tennessee and Vanderbilt, we've both said it. I think this very well could be the best game of the weekend as far as action. I think both offenses will look really good. But the Vols favored by 2.5 points. This is in Knoxville as the Pavias come to town.
Yeah, and he's a pain in the neck, isn't he? He's tough to defend. He's had all the big stats here recently. He's headed to New York, I'm almost sure, for the Heisman. To be part of that ceremony, but I like Tennessee. Mm. They're playing well. They ran it down Florida's throat last week. If you can run the football, that offense obviously is explosive, as we all know. They're 2.5-point favorites, and I think they drag that score out and win by more than that.
Well, you know, I started this week, as you were texting me, very down on the Vols for this game. I was happy with how they played against Florida, obviously. But I could see Pavia and that Vanderbilt offense really exploiting some of the holes in the Tennessee defense. But then you convinced me. Mm. You said, look at these last 4 years with Heupel playing against Vanderbilt.
Yep.
They just put up points. And how good is Vanderbilt's defense?
Yeah, so you're going to have to outscore Tennessee, and outscoring Tennessee, especially in Knoxville, ain't easy.
Not easy.
So I'm just going on what I see, and I think Tennessee is at least a field goal better.
I'm on the Vols as well. And we wrap it up with the Iron Bowl. Could there be another Jordan-Hare miracle on the line here? How much are we going to see Deuce Knight compared to Ashton Daniels? But really, I think the question of this game is, what can that Auburn defense do to the Alabama offense, which has been struggling? The Tide are favored by 5.5 on the road under the lights in Jordan-Hare.
It's not a miracle because you're only, you know, Alabama favored by 5.5, not a ton of points, really. I think Auburn certainly can sneak inside that number. Whether they win or not, I don't know. Mm. But Auburn's defense is no joke, and they could give Alabama fits, the crowd, the momentum. There could be a lot, you know. There could be a lot on Auburn's side on Saturday night.
Let me really take a risk here and tell you exactly how this game is going to end.
Okay,
I think that it's going to come down to a field goal,
right,
as so many Iron Bowls have. And I think the last thing that Alabama fans want to see is their kicker lining up for a game-winning field goal, as he has had some struggles this year. Connor Talty, didn't he get booed in Tuscaloosa here recently?
Well, remember he had a spat with the snapper a couple of weeks ago, the Oklahoma game. He just admonished the snapper after a high snap, and he missed the kick, got partially blocked, and immediately blamed the snapper, which didn't look too very diplomatic at all.
Here's how specific I'll be. Talty off the goalpost.
I like it.
This is the game-winning field goal, and the Auburn Tigers win, and Deuce Knight brings a great coach to Auburn for next year.
That would be a scene.
Yeah, and then what happens with the playoffs? What a great weekend of sports, and I know you'll be watching. Dan, I'll be watching, and everybody listening
to
this.
I haven't felt like this for a weekend of football since I was like 12.
Yeah, now if my kids can just quit asking me to do stuff during the games, that'd be great. All right, we'll be back next week as we talk conference championship games.
Yeah, by the way, you can drop them off in my place,
yeah,
and I'll ignore them as well.
All right, thanks for listening to us. We'll be back.